Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 112 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as Brent Cassina, rotating panel of guests, and myself, Ian Levesey, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. It's a special episode, as this time, we get to interview Mark Waid. We talk about his upcoming collaboration with Stan Lee for Boom Studios, talk a little Irredeemable and Incorruptible, and even go into some Spider-Man. Nice interview here, short and sweet, just the way we like it. Listen to the episode and enjoy. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levesine, and welcome to episode 112 of Comic Timing. Joined here with the co-host, Mr. Brent Cassina. Almost at the co-host, not co-host. I caught myself there.
Almost. Good job.
So we got a special episode here. It's a quickie for us. I mean, in comparison to what we usually do here on the show.
But as far as length and edit time and release time, yes,
most definitely, yeah. But we got a good half hour interview here. Why don't you introduce it? I'll let the co-host do it.
All right. Well, since I'll introduce it. We're interviewing Mark Waid about his upcoming stuff with Boom Studios. Concerning the Stan Lee properties, we also covered the Incorruptible and Irredeemable, as well as a little bit of Spider-Man that he got going on, which we were actually covering the last issue of, number 647.
Indeed.
So check that out on DCBS. I think that's available for order. Yeah, just a quick little interview with Mark Waid, super nice guy. And Ian, I'll let you take it over from here, since you guys are both, you know, mile-a-minute people. Let the Southerner take a back seat and let you run the show.
All right. Well, before we get into the interview, just a reminder that Stan Lee Traveler number one is special discount on DCBS, and they are not only the sponsors of Comic Timing, but they are the sponsors of this very interview. So I want to give big props out there to DCBS, DCBService.com, for setting us up with this interview here. Really, really nice of them to give us the chance to do this, because, well, I mean, hey, come on. It's freaking Mark Waid.
And hey, come on. We're freaking Mark Time. Mark Timing, Comic
Mark
Timing.
Mark Timing. See, that's how much time. we like Mark Waid. We're gonna change our name to Mark Timing right here, then and now. But yeah, no. Cameron shooting this over to us was a really, really cool thing to do. So big ups to them and Zach at DCBS as well for being so nice to us over the past couple of months. So Stan Lee Traveler number one is special discount for 99 cents, 75% off. And unlike a lot of their deals, this is no limit on quantities. From DCBS. So you can order as many 99-cent copies of Stan Lee Traveler you want. Give it to your kids. Give it to your uncle. Give it to your friends. Give it to your great-aunt Ruthie. It doesn't matter. Just buy as many as possible so that this book gets to keep being published. It's written by Mark Waid and art by Chad Harden. You've seen on a bunch of DC stuff and Marvel stuff. He did Warlord over at DC. He did some Spider-Man stuff in Marvel. So it's really, really good there. And not only that, but there's 7 alternate covers to this thing, which is a little bit crazy, but at the same time kind of cool that they got so much talent to work on alternate covers for this. But yeah, 99 cents. Product code is SEP100889. At DCBS. So go into DCBService.com this month for that. And you know what? While we're doing this, how about we just also read off our picks for the month? How about that?
Read them off.
All righty. Well, beginning with Marvel, we have ourselves a anniversary pick, which is Thunderbolts number 150 this month for 50% off DCB price of $249, regular price of $499. This is Jeff Parker's continuation of the Thunderbolts series, and it's the first time in a while that we've had Thunderbolts versus Avengers, which makes me very, very happy. But Brent, you're not a Thunderbolts reader, right?
I read the Warren Ellis stuff, and that's about it.
Okay, all right. So you haven't been following since then.
No.
All right. Well, this could be a good jumping on point for you. All you need to know is that there's the Juggernaut bitch, and the rest, as they say, is history.
And the Old Spice guy.
And the hello, ladies. look at Iron Fist. Now look back to me. Now back to Iron Fist. Yeah. So
I'm on a horse.
I'm on a horse. 50% off for $249 with that one. We got Batman: The Dark Knight number one. I know Brent's looking forward to this one. 75% off. We got Mr. David Finch writing and drawing this one. And has he done any written work before this?
This is his first one.
This is his first one. Okay, all right. Well, this will be good. 99 cents, regular price of $3.99, 75% off. This is a limit of two. However, buy two because it's freaking 75% off. And the indie pick is Utopian number one. This is by Mark Guggenheim and Tara Butters, art and cover by Ryan Bodenheim. And I am hoping that this is the first time in a long time that I have picked a book that Brent will actually like.
Well, let's throw The Traveler in there for this month, too, since we're promoting. Let's get it, too.
Why not, man? I mean,
we'll talk about that for sure, because we talked about it on this show. We might as well read it, right?
Sounds good to me.
That's the whole point.
Yeah, come on.
Get more readers.
Come on, man. Definitely. So yeah, those are our two indie picks. The Utopian number one is 50% off for $1.49, regular price of $2.99. And yet again, The Traveler, 99 cents, 75% off. And all is well with the world. So go ahead and listen to our interview. Go ahead and go to dcbservice.com and make sure to use the promo code CT8 to get an additional 8% off on your first order with Discount Comic Book Service. If you've never used them before, this is a good month to start. Here's our interview with Mark Waid. All right, and a special interview here for Comic Timing, this time via Skype with Mr. Mark Waid, who we've met a couple times at MegaCon, and this time he's enjoying himself in his office while Brent and I are in our respective places as well. Mark, how you doing this afternoon?
Doing good.
Good. Good to hear. Afternoon for you, evening for us in the East Coast.
Yes.
So how did this the collaboration with Stan Lee come to be exactly? I mean, who approached who when it comes to this?
I believe it was Ross Ritchie, who was the publisher of Boom. He approached Stan and Pow Entertainment about teaming up on some stuff. But Stan was very amenable to the idea. Once he heard some of the people that would be involved with it, he was even more excited. And it just went from there. Stan and Ross and I sat down and, you know, threw some ideas back and forth, and, you know, Stan had some concepts, and we had some refinements, and Stan had some refinements and our refinements, and before you know it, we came up with a line of superheroes.
Fantastic. So it's a very collaborative effort. It's not just Stan scripting and then you writing the rest, right? It's a little
right,
back and forth.
Exactly. I mean, that's one of the things that really impressed me about Stan in this whole process, is that he was, you know, I'll be honest with you, I mean, when we first you know, approached the idea, I was, you know, not really knowing Stan that well, although other than just by his own legend, I was, you know, I was afraid it might be one of those situations where, you know, like some other celebrity-driven comics that will go unnamed by other companies, that it would be sort of like, oh, we're basically buying Stan's name, but that's not the case.
You mean the
at
Sarah
all.
Palin was, comics?
yeah, Sarah Palin presents Birds of Prey. I love that comic. No, the idea that Stan was very protective of that as well, and he said, and the, you know, these exact words more than once, he said, you know, he doesn't want to misrepresent, you know, to the readers and to the fans. If it's going to have his name on it, then he wants to roll up his sleeves and get involved and be in it, and I think that's terrific.
Yeah, and he's got so much experience under his belt as well. I mean he doesn't seem like the type of person that would just, you know, shoot something out and then let his name be attached to it.
No, I think, you know, I don't think he operates that way. I think he's genuinely protective of the fans and of the readers and making sure that they're not sold a bill of goods.
Definitely. Now tell us a little bit about the character of the Traveler, the one that you in particular are going to be working on. Because from the looks of things, he's like almost like the anti-Quantum Leap, you know, where like Quantum Leap is going back to try and, you know, change things that once went wrong. The Traveler right. doesn't seem to really care.
Well, he does care, but his sense of priorities is a little more humanistic. His sense of priorities is that he won't go deliberately mucking around on the time stream, but at the same time, he will not stand by and let things happen that are, you know, that cause human tragedy or that are problematic in the moment. My analogy keeps being that, you know, he's the old time travel trope is, you know, God forbid you step on a butterfly in the past, because then you come back to a future where Homer Simpson has no donuts. and that's all well and good, but I kind of like the idea of writing about a time travel guy who puts that second and puts, you know, saving lives and human compassion first, and then worries about the consequences later. And that's, you know, that's a big part of the ongoing character is, you know, being in situations where he has to make the hard choice about whether or not to affect the time stream. And a lot of times, if I do my job right, a lot of times his choices are very surprising and not at all what you would expect out of your standard time travel story.
Right. Okay. So is the time stream constantly shifting throughout the story?
Not exactly. I can't say too much without giving away a little bit of the first arc and how it all plays out. But that's, you know, but you'll see. You'll see the consequences of what happens when you step on too many butterflies.
Very cool. Very cool. And I mean, you're far from a stranger when it comes to time stories throughout your career. What do you bring to the table? I mean, because I know you've done stuff with The Flash, and you've done stuff with Kingdom Come was a future story, but that's a little bit different there. But how did your previous experience help you build the character of the Traveler and the Ark?
In the sense of really, this is, I love time travel stories so much, and I like writing time travel stories, but I've never really had a chance to sort of cut loose with a guy whose whole purpose is sort of moving back and forth in time, mm-hmm. and B, I've not had, you know, having written all the by-the-rules time travel stories, you know, don't step on a butterfly. Now I finally get a chance to sort of write the antithesis of that, now that I've gotten that out of my system.
So because he can kind of break the rules, is that kind of part of the reason why he's wearing a costume in it, as opposed to like Rip Hunter or Marty McFly kind of blending in with the time period?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he actually kind of needs to be flagged as an anomaly. He needs to stand out. He needs people to know he's coming for reasons that you'll see. And that's a very good reason why he wears not so much it's an adapted costume. I mean, that's without giving away too much of the origin again, which sort of spills out at the end of the first arc.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason for the getup.
Very cool. Now tell us a little about the artist, Chad Harden, because I've seen his name on a couple of books here and there. I know he did some Spider-Man work in recent memory. But
And I think more recently he's been doing Warlord over at DC Comics. Mm-hmm. And he's fabulous. He's just – those layouts have come in, a couple of months ago, the first breakdowns layouts came in because Stan wanted to see layouts before we went to full pencils, because he wanted to, you know, bring his storytelling chops to the table as well. And Stan's, like I said, that not to get away from Stan, but Stan's been great about wanting to not only be there at the consulting part and the story part and sit there and knock around story ideas and throw stuff back and forth, but he's also been great about, okay, let me see the dialogue, let me see the pencils, let me see the colors, let me see the covers, and let me, you know, and giving notes on that stuff, because again, he wants to be involved. So, you know, Stan took one look at Chad's breakdowns, and his only comment was, "These are great." And I felt the same way. There's such an energy to them, and the storytelling is crystal clear, and the characters are great, and it's just, he gets it. He's really on the same page.
Well, that could also harken back to the days where, in the old bullpen days, where Stan literally was, collaborating on every single effort. I guess that's sort of hard to wash out of your system.
Yeah.
is that something that Stan mostly does, like, most of the time? Because I guess stuff we've seen recently, like in DC Comics, you'll read something and it'll say based on a concept by Grant Morrison or something. So I guess Stan is actually taking a more active role. Do you think that's something that you guys pursued as part of the partnership, or is that just Stan's personality because it has his name on it?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, it's more the latter, but it's also something, but it's very much something we were open to. No more than Stan did we want to give the impression that we're just buying the guy's name and slapping a signature on it, and he doesn't see it. We didn't want to give that impression. Because if we're going to do that, you know what? Then let's just go create our own stuff. and do it ourselves. So why lease the name? No. You want to sit down with the guy who, you know, pretty much single-handedly defined what superheroes were for the 20th century, and sit down with this guy as he asks. And it was his question. It was a great one, which was, what does it mean to be a superhero in the 21st century, and how is that different from being a superhero in the 1960s, the 1970s? And, you know, those were Stan's questions, and they were great questions, and that was a great starting point for the whole line of books.
Now I know that some higher ups at companies have some difficulty juggling the writing with their other abilities, but that's never really seemed to have been an issue with you, Mark.
Oh man. Let me run down the people who would disagree with you. My personal trainer, my dietitian, my giant stack of books by my bed, my MasterCard account that keeps being late because I keep forgetting to pay it. Like, it's, I appreciate the thought, but it's, you know, I mean, if I had a, you know, if I had a wife and two kids and a dog and a suburban life and a, you know, part time, you know, hobby and stuff, it might be more difficult, but, you know, this is the beauty of being immersed in it, is when your hobby's your job, it's, you know, it's kind of easy to make time for it.
Yeah, it's hard to be on a treadmill and write at the same time.
Yeah, as a quick
be
survey,
I guess.
Comic writers in general would no doubt bear out, yeah.
So with the other books that are coming out under the Stan Lee umbrella here, we've got Soldier Zero and we've got Starborn. You want to tell us a little bit about those two?
Yeah, Soldier Zero is our lead. That actually comes out next month in October, and it's a cracking good read, as the Brits would say. Brits like Paul Cornell, who we picked up to do it because I've known Paul for a while. I've been a big fan of his work, and not only just on Captain Britain over at Marvel and some of his other Marvel projects, but as well his work on Doctor Who, his work on the Doctor Who television series, and some of the best episodes of that he's written. So, known him for a while, been a fan of his work, and looking for something to do together. And when Ross and I met him for this, a little less than a year ago, I guess it was, we made an appointment to sit down with him because he was going to be in Los Angeles. It's a great story, and we tell him we want to talk to him about something, and we don't say what it is. And he comes in the bar to meet us, and the very first question he has before we even get about what you want to talk to me about, I just want to know. I see these ads around that just say "Stands Back." Is that you guys? Because at that point, all we were doing was floating a viral campaign out there that says "Stands Back," and we didn't even have Boom's name attached to it. And Paul says, is that you guys? He's so excited about this. And they said, funny you should mention that. And he was, he was all agog. And he was, not only was he eager to jump in, and, I thought that was fortuitous that he was excited before we even got to it. But even more so, when we pitched to him the three books that we wanted to do, without any prodding or any sort of leading of the witness, he gravitated toward the one we were hoping he would gravitate toward, which is Soldier Zero. And he's just hit it out of the park. And the high concept there is you've got an Afghan war vet who is now confined to a wheelchair, and he's back in the States, and he's trying to live out his life and trying to adapt to his new condition. He is still a little angry and still a little bitter about it. He's a positive attitude about it. He's a can-do guy, but still deep down inside, he's got some anger and bitterness about the war and about what happened to him. And, he tends to be very much toward the anti-war sentiment. And then suddenly an alien weapon of war sort of almost literally dropped in his lap. And now that becomes his salvation. It becomes a thing that allows him to move again, allows him to walk, allows him to adventure, and allows him to escape the chair. And this is a real moral dilemma for him, because as a pacifist, he's suddenly bonded to this alien weapon of war. And what are the upsides and the downsides? And who else is coming to look for that weapon now that it's here? And does he, what does he do to defend that weapon? And is he once more a soldier, whether he wants to be or not?
I could really never imagine being in that situation myself, being a pacifist and then having a weapon of war attached to you.
Literally attached to you. And, what do you do with it? And it forces him to confront a bunch of personal issues, which is, makes for a great character. And so that's the lead book. Javier Pena is doing the artwork, and he's doing great. We love that guy's work. And then we've got the third book in this. So that's October. November is Traveler, and then December is Starborn. And December is by Chris Robinson, who is the only New York Times best-selling author on our list of writers, and I say that with some jealousy and bitterness, but not much. And he and Stan, have collaborated on this notion of a young guy, young IT guy, just an ordinary guy with a pocket protector and a desk job and dull data entry job, but he dreams of being a science fiction writer because ever since he's been a boy, he's been crafting this world and building this world out of his own head and sort of world building and big dreams of being a famous science fiction writer someday, only to find out that he is, in fact, not a human being. He is, in fact, the heir to an alien throne. And now that he has come of age, the people who want him to assume the throne have come to get him, and much worse, the other alien races, of which there are many, who are vested in stopping him from ascending to the throne, have also come to Earth to kill him. And he's just a guy. He's just Chuck. He's the guy doing his job, and the next thing he knows, he's in the middle of an interplanetary war.
So sort of similar to like a Nova type thing there.
Yeah, it's just he's the guy, and boom, he suddenly realizes he has an alien destiny that far transcends him.
Are these going to be more like a singular universe? Are you looking to do like a shared universe with like your two books, Irredeemable and Incorruptible, or is each book kind of singular and crossover? It makes sense because I'm trying to think back to like the Image days. You couldn't really tell if it was shared or if it was singular,
right.
And at times when they did crossover, it got kind of messy and stuff like that. So, you guys have any long term plans for that?
Well, yeah, and actually, I think the Irredeemable Incorruptible analogy is actually a pretty good analogy because these are a shared universe in the same sense that Irredeemable and Incorruptible are, but in the same sense that Irredeemable and Incorruptible are, that you don't have to read both books, I'm not forcing it down your throat. I mean, I've been at the beginning of so many really badly thought out, shared universe superhero startups that I've kind of learned how not to do it now. And I think the first and foremost thing is to never, ever make the readers feel as if they're missing something if they're not buying any other books, because I don't at $3.99 a copy or whatever, whatever it is all of us are charging, DC, Marvel, and Boom and whatever charging across the board. I don't want you to feel like we're holding a gun to your head. You've got to go buy that other $4 book or that other $4 book to get the whole story. That's never the case. I want it to be a more organic shared universe like the Marvel universe was at first, which was you had Spider-Man, you had the Hulk, you had Fantastic Four. You don't realize it's a shared universe until the first time Spider-Man meets the Fantastic Four, and suddenly, that's interesting. And then, and then Spider-Man meets Thor, and then the X-Men meet Iron Man, and then it starts to build out from there. And that's the model we want to take. So we're going to be slow and easy about it. It's definitely a shared universe, but we're not looking at cramming it down your throats. My philosophy really is that I don't want you to buy our books because you feel like you have to.
Mm-hmm.
Or that we're forcing you to, or to get a whole story. I want you to come back month after month because you want to come back, because you like what you read, you're invested in the characters, and you can't wait to see what happens next. And that's the that's the selling point. It's not the marketing, and it's not the false sense of, you must buy every issue of every book or else you don't get the whole picture.
Right. So something more along the lines of like when in the old days, if something had happened in Thor where all of a sudden it was winter in New York, it would be winter in the Spider-Man comic, but he'd go and have his own adventure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're working together to sort of plant those seeds now early on and sort of share information back and forth and share little bits and pieces. I mean, you'll start to see pretty early on, you'll see references to alien races in Starborn that are also referred to, for instance, in Soldier Zero, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're missing a piece of the puzzle. It's just, interesting, you're mentioning those guys over here, and then if you're paying close attention, meanwhile, the Starborn character is meeting the same race over here, and hey, look at that.
Very cool, very cool. Now going on to the Incorruptible and Irredeemable, that those are definitely ongoings. Those are going to be going on for a while to come. You want to maybe update people a little bit on what's going on in that right now for those people that may not have been picking it up until now?
Yeah, well, I bring it to speed. I mean, in Incorruptible, which is the story about the villain who turns into a hero, we have Max Damage who has gone through at least one sidekick named Jailbait so far, and now is on his second sidekick named Jailbait, and they have gone up against the Diamond Gang, which is a group of racial supremacists who believe that they are doing the work of the Plutonian. They believe in their hearts that they are. Let me back it up. Let's start with Irredeemable. We'll come back in case you're new to all this. Let me back it up.
Okay.
Irredeemable, the story of the Plutonian, the story of the world's greatest superhero who became the world's greatest supervillain when he snapped one day. Although as you sort of read the series, you get the sense that it's been a long time coming and it's not just like a light switch. He didn't just turn into a villain overnight.
Yeah.
There is, you know, there was something building with it. But still, he was the world's most trusted, most beloved superhero. And he goes on a rampage. He snaps. And the world goes topsy-turvy. And now millions are dead. And everyone lives under the specter of this crazed god who lives in the sky and can kill you with a glance just by looking down. And his former teammates, the Paradigm, are scrambling around, putting together pieces and trying desperately to take him off the playing field before he levels the rest of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what's been going on in Irredeemable. And again, he's the, or rather, yeah, in Irredeemable, he's the, you know, Plutonian is the, you know, the blonde, blue-eyed, you know, Aryan's, you know, dream, if you will. He doesn't think of himself that way, but he's just, you know, he's the white guy.
Right.
And so in Incorruptible, what's been going on is that is this gang of thugs called the, actually a pretty big gang, actually, that turns out has some pretty serious backing, has adopted the Plutonian as their mascot and sort of said, oh, okay, we're just following in his footsteps because, see, what he's really doing is he's doing ethnic cleansing. He wants to rid the world of all those nasty brown people and yellow people, and we being the white guys, you know, the skinheads, if you will, you know, the you know, we're safe as long as we're doing his work. Now, of course, that's crap. I mean, they want to believe that because they don't want to face the truth. The truth is Plutonian hates everybody at this point. You know, everyone's life is up for grabs. No one's life is safer than anyone else's, and we all live under the specter of imminent death. But this is their way of trying to make themselves feel better, you know, and believing that somehow, building up in their head that somehow this excuses their racism, and in fact their racist tendencies are what's going to keep them alive. So it's a pretty interesting foe for Max Damage to go up against, because it's not so much one guy can punch as it is a growing ideology that's sort of spreading across the U.S.
Right.
And what do you do about that?
Well, so in essence, it's not like a light switch just went off and this bad guy turned good and this good guy turned bad. There were definitely lead-ups to this, but both unspoken and spoken in the books themselves.
Right. Cool. Right, exactly. And you know, the tough thing with the tougher job, I think, is on the – I mean, actually, Plutonian has the easy job. It's much easier to be evil than it is to be good. with Max – trying to be a good guy in a world that has always regarded him as being one of the world's greatest supervillains, tough, because he has that sort of reformed alcoholic point of view on the world, which mm-hmm. is that he doesn't dare slip even an inch. You know, he knows where the boundaries are. He's very careful not to take any sort of moral latitude on anything whatsoever, and he knows that in order to do this job right, it's sort of the equivalent of, you know, in the first issue, I had him burn all the money he's stolen. I had him burn his supercar. I had him destroy his headquarters. I had him abandon all the things that were any sort of tie to the past, because it was all dirty money to him.
Mm-hmm.
And his sidekick was freaking out, but his attitude, you know, it's the same thing as they'll tell you in AA, I assume, which is, you know, one of your first jobs is to go make sure that there's no booze in your house, no temptation.
Right,
you know, live the straight and narrow life, and so for Max, it's a constant struggle to never ever morally compromise himself in any way, shape, or form, because he knows it's a very slippery slope, and he's terrified that if he slips up in one instance, if he lets one thing slide, then before he knows it, he might end up back where he was.
So it's similar in a way, well, not exactly similar, but for comparison's sake, like how in Marvel, for example, Juggernaut, you know, the type of guy that has gone back and forth on the hero villain thing 87 times now, it feels like, and
right.
it's so easy to make that slip, to go down that one wrong turn, and before you know it, you're back in your lair of villainy, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, much easier too. I mean, not that I'm speaking from personal experience, he said hesitantly, but I would imagine it's much easier to be evil than it is to be good. Not that I'm evil. Not that I would know anything about being evil, he said defensively. Yeah, exactly. He said, steepling his fingers under his chin. Yeah.
Now, Spider-Man, just to roll over to there real quick, that's wrapping up. At least the Brand New Day storyline is wrapping up. and you've got a storyline that's unraveling now that seems like it's been building up for quite some time in the books.
It has been, actually. It's something that the Webheads, which is the cute name we've given all our collaborative Spider-Man writers as we sit in a room and knock ideas together. It's something that we spun around 5-6 months ago at our last retreat, mm-hmm. when we knew we were coming to the end of this whole brand new day era of Spider-Man, and we were going to move away from the 3 times a month publishing plan, and the books are going to go to Dan Slott. So to close that with a big bang story, we had been with the Gauntlet. We had been building out, and reintroducing a lot of Spider-Man's older foes that are sort of supercharged up and sort of sometimes new motivations or new powers or sort of otherwise sort of spit shined and brought up to date. And now that we brought them out one by one, we always knew we were going to blow out with a giant slam bang supervillain blowout on Spider-Man, if you will, a big assault on Spider-Man. So we knocked that around a few times at the conference, and what we came up with was the idea of, knowing that Menace, the former Harry Osborn fiance who had imbibed goblin serum, mm-hmm. and become Menace. She's out there, and she's got Norman Osborn's baby. She's carrying Norman Osborn's baby. Norman's the goblin. She's what she is, and she's not a goblin. She's something different. Their baby would conceivably be one of the most valuable commodities on the planet once it's born, because it's not only is it a biological aberration with all kind of potential weird, serum stuff in its blood, but also as Norman Osborn's baby, that's a hell of a bargaining chip. I mean, yeah, Norman Osborn has betrayed the United States. He's in custody. He's in lockdown. But Norman Osborn's one of those guys that even in the true silence of the lambs, full face mask in a gurney with a straitjacket on, you're still going to be scared of this guy. And so if you've got his baby, it gives you quite a bargaining chip.
I would say so.
Now, yes. Now, how'd this come to about? You guys were sitting in a room and they said, well, who's going to write it? And you went, you know what, guys? I've already got 3 books. I'm running the company. I'll whack out the end
of
the
Spider-Man. Yeah, exactly. I got weekends free. Exactly. Man, I was glaring at them because they were all like, well, it seems like this is the kind of thing that's right up your alley. And I'm like, no, we're going to do this together. It's going to be great.
Like spin the bottle like it's your turn, Mark. Sorry.
Yeah. I'll do an outline for it because I kind of have the clearest vision of it in my head at this point, and everybody else has got other stuff working and this is the furthest off. And let me kind of do an outline on it. And before you know it, that's sort of built into, well, okay, I can do it if I can have some, if I can have a little bit of time. And then, oh my God, it's I'm really happy with the way it's turned out. And honestly, once Steve Wacker, who was the editor, said, well, let's get Paul Azaceta to do the artwork, that clinched it for me. I mean, I know that I really love Paul's work, and I think he's a really great storyteller. So, yeah.
And even after this is all said and done, I'm sure the door is always open for you to do more stuff at Marvel once this is finished up.
Yeah, they made it very clear, which I mean, one of the things that they, that Tom Brevoort approached me about some months ago, too, was a 5-issue Captain America miniseries that begins in November.
Very cool.
That I'll be doing with, with George Molina, and I'm very excited about that. And, it's a little 5 issues in and out, and then beyond that, there's talk about me doing some other Marvel stuff, but let's see where we are.
Yeah, and that Captain America guy, he's really getting popular these days.
I hear there's a film coming out, as luck would have it. So, I will be happy to jump on that bandwagon, sure.
Yeah. Gee, I wonder.
Yeah.
Now the Traveler is 99 cents over at DCBS, and it comes out on November 24th, correct?
I believe that's correct.
Okay, cool. Very cool. And after that, December for the next one, and is issue 2 of Paul Cornell's series also coming out in November?
Yes, it is. So, yeah, all monthlies, ongoing monthly series, beginning in October with Soldier Zero, November for Traveler, and December for Starborn.
Fantastic. All right. And you could find these all at, what is Boom's website again? Is that boomstudios.com?
It's boom-studios.com.
Boom-studios.com. Okay, great. And you can find out.
He's shaking his fist at the guys who actually got boomstudios.com. Yeah.
Are they actually doing anything with the website?
who knows? We're going to have to stage a coup at some point. But there you go. But boom-studios.com, or you can always check us out on our, we've got an app on iPad and on iPhone, and gosh, we're just everywhere.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for taking some time out of your schedule for joining us here, Mark. And actually, before we go, what do you guys have lined up for New York Comic Con?
It's a good question. Well, actually, an announcement we can't really we're building to, but we can't make there, or we can't make here, but we will be building, we will be making it there. But beyond that, I mean, we're bringing in a lot of people. We're bringing in Keith R.A. Candido, who's doing the the Farscape books for us. Mm-hmm. Amy Neberson, who's doing the Muppet stuff for us. We're bringing in as many people to New York as we can, because that's a good show.
Yeah,
and of course I'll be there, and the rest of the Boom crew will be there happily signing and selling books and talking about Stan. Of course, this guy named Stan Lee will also be there. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he will also be there talking about the Stan books
as the guest of honor of New
as
York
I believe
Comic-Con.
The guest of honor. We will be responsible for throwing rose petals at his feet and getting him. But he will he'll be there. For Boom, talking about our stuff, and it's always fun to share the dais with Stan.
Yeah, I love the job you guys have been doing on the licensed materials, by the way, because I mean there was such a time where a lot of licensed materials were coming out that just seemed like that they were just being knocked out without any personality behind them, and both the Disney stuff and the Pixar stuff and the Farscape stuff, those have all been really, really lights out.
Well, thank you. I mean, again, I wish I could take credit for that stuff, but it's our team of crack editors who were, who I would start naming, except I'm going to accidentally leave somebody out. So let's just say under the direction of new editor-in-chief Mac Agnon, he is, he's got himself a great crew there, and they're all doing terrific.
All right. Well, sounds good to me. I'll be at New York Comic Con as well, so hopefully I'll be able to stop by and say hi to you at some point. And yet again, thanks so much for joining us here, Mark.
No, my pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Definitely. All right. And yeah, keep in touch.
All right. Take care.
All righty.
The Decepticons. Hey. The song. More than you bargained for. Yeah.
Well, that was fun.
Very fun.
Man.
Good job there, Ian.
Hey, come on. You had like three questions that you threw in there.
Yeah, I'm a southerner. It takes time. It takes time. We're much more laid back down here.
Oh. Well, I mean, you had fun, right?
Yes, I had a great time.
Well, that's
and I'm sure he'll be at MegaCon, because Stan Lee is going to be at MegaCon this year in March.
He is. Wow.
So he's the guest of honor at MegaCon, so that'll be a big thing. So obviously, I'm going to try and catch up with Mark down there at MegaCon, since I can't make it to New York this year.
Well, hey, maybe you can put me up in your guest room this year so I can save some money.
Maybe.
Hey, yeah, because I'll be spending, at least $1,000-some-odd enjoying my full week down in Orlando come November. So
yeah, man.
good times. But yeah, this was definitely a lot of fun here. Major, major thank you to Boom Studios and Mark Wade for letting us have the interview. And major props yet again to Cameron at DCBS for setting this all up. DCBService.com, Stanley Traveler number 1, 99 cents, 75% off. And our other picks, Thunderbolts 150, 50% off, $249. Dark Knight number 1, 99 cents. And Utopian number 1, 50% off. Make sure to use the promo code CT8 to get 8% off on your first order. So we're going to wrap things up here. It's a pretty short episode for us. However, we'll be back in less than a week with another episode, proving that comic timing occasionally does come out on a regular basis.
For now,
yeah. Until we fall behind again, we've got one episode in the can, man. That we've had in the can since what, July?
It's okay. It's an evergreen, like you said on the email.
Right, exactly. It's Batman Under the Red Hood. Those of you who listened to the Comic Book Roadshow episode that I did already know who our special guest is, but everybody else can keep guessing until it winds up happening. But
I didn't know you're going to air our dirty laundry on the Comic Book Roadshow, man.
Hey, he wanted an inside scoop. I gave him the inside scoop. That's the way it rolls, man. Hey, but I made you look really good, okay?
Yes, you did. Yes, right? You did.
Because you're my brother. That's the way it works.
My brother. What, from word? Another mother.
Word. Yeah, you're my southern brother.
What episode is that of Comic Book Roadshow? Was that 106, I think?
I believe it's 106, yes.
There's a link on our forum, so go check that out.
Yes, definitely. And Comic Timing will be at New York Comic Con this year, so make sure to check us out, nycomiccon.com, to get your tickets. We don't have an official promo to read, so I'm just going to go off the cuff here on what to expect. Stan Lee is their guest of honor, as you heard in this episode. Mark Waid will be there. All of Marvel and DC are going to be up there, so you'll have DiDio and Quesada. They'll have booths. I'm sure Alex Ross and a bunch of other people are going to be there. But sadly, Mr. Fraction had to pull out. He just announced on his Twitter today that he will not be there. But we can live on without him, I think. Podcast Arena this year is jam-packed with about eight different podcasting people there. Nine technically, because Rick Gordon wasn't on the list. But he's going to be sharing a table with me. And make sure to stop by booth 524 at New York Comic Con for the Podcast Arena and New York Comic and Comic Timing. New York Comic Timing? What the hell? I'm combining words here.
That sounds like a special episode to me.
New York Comic Timing. Friday and Saturday, October 8th and 9th, I will be there. Will not be there Sunday, I'm afraid. Got a freaking wedding to go to in Philadelphia, but I'll live. And chances are, when I'm gone, Ziggo will wind up taking my seat, because that's the way things roll. But yeah, definitely go to mycomiccon.com to get your tickets, and check us out at the Podcast Arena, because we'll be happy to see you, and we will probably have other stuff to give out, such as free comic books, because I want to get rid of half of my shit that I got lying around here. All right, that's about it, man. Anything else you want to say?
That's it.
All right. So the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com. Graciously hosted by Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. And we're also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts over at comicbooknoise.com/league. If you want to send us iTunes reviews on iTunes, that is graciously appreciated. And that's about it. So for Mr. Cassina and for Mr. Wade, I mean, let us see, reminding everybody out there that there's always time for comics, true believers. Do you actually take notes or anything, or are you just flying
nope.
See your pants?
Pants, man, pants.
It's all about the pants.
Damn, I'm on, like, just scrolling through Netflix, and they added a bunch of movies and TV shows now.
Yeah, they signed a deal with one of the big networks.
Saw that.
Two big
companies, I think.
Nice.
So it's a lot more robust, finally. Because for a little while there, it was getting kind of like, okay, not really interested, or seeing that.
I appreciate things that are robust.
Robust. The best word ever.
So,
skins, what is this?
So are you all moved in right now, or is that
I am sitting in my loft next to my bookshelves of trades, so this might be the new Comic Timing spot. Not sure.
Fantastic.
Kind of echoey up here, so.
Well, it's kind of echoey where I am too, but it never really actually came in on the call.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah,
our second bedroom still has a bunch of boxes in it, but that's because that's our office. We don't have a desk in it.
So. Right, gotcha. Yeah. I mean, that's technically what I'm in right now, because I mean, that's the second bedroom that we basically turned into the comic room / where we keep our computers.
Right.
And once we actually put like shelves in and shit, it got a lot less echoey in here. But I remember like the first time that I recorded in here, I kept hearing myself bouncing off the walls, and I was like, whoa, dude!
Yeah, we're going to put a futon up here, but it'll be echoey because it's nothing but wall right now.
Oh, well, that's good.
On the one.
That's good. Yeah. Put a futon in there so I can randomly like stop over and be like, "Hey guys, you want to put me up for the night?"
Yeah, randomly, 3,000 miles later.
Hey! I have my ways. Okay. Once they invent teleportation, I am set.